tweet at Today SOR.
Welcome back to Westminster. We're in central London today, just 3 days ahead now of the British general election. And with me in studio, some Remainers, some Brexiteers. With me are Laura Perrins, a member of the Irish diaspora, originally from Balbriggan in North County Dublin. And also here, Lucy Thomas, head of Brexit advice at Edelman Communications, and also the former deputy director of Stronger In, the campaign to keep Britain in the European Union. Lance Price is a former director of communications for the Labour Party and special advisor to Prime Minister Tony Blair. Before that, he was BBC defence correspondent and also covered events as a younger reporter in Northern Ireland. And Philip Blond is a former special advisor to David Cameron and election campaigns consultant. Laura Perrins, what do you make of the emphasis, I suppose, on the positive? Not that information or intelligence has been missed, if you like, about particularly one of the perpetrators of Saturday night's atrocity, but look at the great job the police did reacting and having the three of them dead within 8 minutes, and generally foiling five attacks in the last 3 months.
Well, I mean, I think British security services have always been very strong since, of course, the Troubles, but I mean, it was a fantastic response to have shot three of them dead in 8 minutes. The problem is that seven members of the public had already been killed, and a number of others are in hospital. Some no doubt will have life-changing injuries. So the threat from Islamist terrorism and extremism, I think, is real and serious. It shouldn't be treated disproportionately. But I'm not sure either May, and certainly Corbyn, have a true grip on the scale of this threat that is currently facing Britain. I mean, Corbyn would be a real and present danger if he was in 10 Downing Street. May needs to get a grip on it now, and her speech was much better yesterday than it had been previously.
A real and present danger, Lance Price? A Labour Prime Minister in 10 Downing Street, Jeremy Corbyn?
I think a lot of people would look at Jeremy Corbyn's record on terrorism, on some of the friends he's had in the past, and some of the things he's said about, for example, shoot-to-kill policies. He very, very wisely didn't repeat those comments yesterday, but he did in the wake of the attacks in Paris, and he did in the wake of the previous attack here in London at Westminster Bridge. So I'm sure that senior people in the security services in this country would be disturbed, to say the very least, at the prospect of Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister. And I think it will be something in the back of people's minds when they go in to vote on Thursday.
And to come to you, Philip Blond, as I say, former special advisor to David Cameron and an election campaigns consultant, how do you expect the final closing days? It's really, I suppose, there's only 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then people go out and vote on Thursday. How will the party headquarters and the managers try to manage that?
Well, I mean, traditionally, you would want to return, if you're the Conservative Party, to the agenda that you thought would win, which would make it about Brexit. But Brexit is the issue, it's the dog that hasn't barked, and I don't think it's recoverable. I think the Labour manifesto was surprisingly strong, because it actually spoke to a new reality, which is people feeling economically and culturally insecure. And I think that, coupled with, I think, a much better campaign that people expected from Jeremy Corbyn, has contributed to essentially knocking the Conservative campaign off course. That said, I think the Conservatives will still win comfortably. I think the doubts about Corbyn, as Lance expressed, are deep and real, and I think have a basis in fact. So I think that really what May now needs to do is actually paint the picture of what Brexit is for. The poetry of the Conservative manifesto was very strong. It was a break with the past, because it's clear that the past policies are now not equal to the challenges we face. And she needs to paint a picture of what Britain will be like after Brexit, of the type of Britain she's trying to now create. And I think that can help steady the ship and win further voters to her cause. I think just repeating the strong and stable, it's a broken message, it doesn't work. Brexit election doesn't work. I think they have to be flexible enough to go where the territory now is.
Yeah, we'll come back in a few minutes to the security elements of this, but to come to you, Lucy Thomas, I mean, what do you make of that argument that they need to get back to a sort of a simple message that's easily understood?
Yeah, I think events have clearly got in the way of the election that both sides planned. I think if you look at Theresa May's plan was to stick to that strong and stable message, repeat it ad nauseam, no matter what the subject you're talking about, and wanted clearly to make it about Brexit and to ask people repeatedly, who is the leader you trust most to deal with Brexit?
But is she vulnerable? I mean, in terms of trust, to go back to Laura's point, is she vulnerable on security? Because she was the Home Secretary for 6 years, the number of police, the numbers dropped significantly, and Corbyn made a point last night, you can't protect the British people on the cheap.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about this is that, you know, usually these arguments are had in theory, but we're seeing this in real time. This is politicians responding to events, and for me, far too quickly politicising them. I think for Jeremy Corbyn to stand up last night and start attacking, and for the Prime Minister to be so bold, actually, in what she said on the steps number 10. As you say, she said it hasn't been working, we need to do things radically different. Well, she has been Home Secretary for the last 7 years, and so if someone was failing in that, then fingers will be pointed at her. So I think you're right, there will be questions about her record. And this morning, the Culture Secretary, who was sort of sent out to do the morning media round, was pressed on whether police numbers have been cut and got into a bit of a mess, because it's clear they have cut police numbers quite radically.
In fact, I think
that's right. I mean, I think if Theresa May was facing anyone other than Jeremy Corbyn, the critique of her would have some purchase. But because Corbyn is so clearly seems to be on the side of people who are hostile to the UK, friends with both the IRA and with Hamas, these critiques really lack purchase. But I think some of them have merit.
But we saw in America where people said that Trump was unelectable, and yet there was this sense, enough is enough, something's got to change, we're fed up with the existing promises and solutions. It benefited Trump. It's not inconceivable that it could benefit Corbyn, even though on paper people would say he's unelectable.
I think Lance is right. I think it's clear that British pollsters are all over the place. They don't have a yardstick to measure the election. Now, the variations are from 1 to 12%. All of the candidates I speak to on the ground see no surge for Jeremy Corbyn at all. So every report I've had back from Conservative MPs and Labour MPs campaigning say there is no Labour surge. So we simply have anecdote on the basis of kind of local elections versus polls that tell us a multitude of different things we genuinely don't seem to know. And I think that's where we are.
Okay, I just want to pause there and go back to a conversation I had yesterday, because while we were at the police cordon on Southwark Street yesterday afternoon, with the assembled world media against a backdrop of London's famous building known as the Shard, and indeed a very heavy police presence all around us, I met up with Margaret Gilmore. She is a senior associate fellow at the Royal United Services Institute, a think tank in other words, and I began by asking for her first reflections on this latest attack in the hours after it took place.
Well, it's obviously worrying and it's obviously disturbing for people, and people are now thinking, are they safe? And the one message I would say is that however awful it is for those caught up in this, it is still very, very rare. You're more likely to be involved in a road accident in London in that sort of numbers than caught up in a terrorist attack. Having said that, moving on to the attack itself...
Before you do, Margaret, sorry, I read one piece of commentary this morning and the heading on it was, is terrorism the new normal?
Well, hang on a minute. You know, we've had a very, very small number of people killed this year by terrorism. There was a decade where the number was about two. And then there were, in 2005, 12 years ago, we had just under 60. So these numbers, compared to the number of people killed on the roads or other risks, are very, very low. But it's the thing about getting into a car is it's your choice. The thing about terrorism is they are absolutely trying to terrorise us.
And when the Prime Minister, Theresa May, says difficult and embarrassing questions have to be asked now, what kind of framing is going to be on or in those questions?
Well, Theresa May has been responsible for this as Home Secretary for many, many years, and now as Prime Minister. And those difficult questions that she posed today, I have heard before, and I can't see any of the other politicians either coming up with new questions there. She did talk a lot about the cyber issues, but the problem with that is that she can't tell people who are based abroad that they absolutely have to follow the strict laws of the UK.
She referred to the need, as she saw it, for international cooperation to tackle the safe space that the extremists now occupy in cyberspace. And I'm just wondering, I mean, could that involve working with the Americans, the rest of Europe, and other international states or entities, with the view to putting massive pressure, say, on WhatsApp, which is impenetrable from the point of view of the security services?
You're absolutely right, but they've been doing this already. David Cameron sent a special envoy, Nigel Sheinwald, to do exactly that, to speak to them individually, quietly, as a specialist, and to bring on the Europeans and what have you. And some progress has made, and progress is still being made, little by little. They are doing more and more. But they can't force them completely to do or to monitor everything that goes up on Facebook or Twitter or Apple or whatever it is. So that is a problem. I think the areas that we're going to have to look at, and we've looked at before many, many times, are going to be the areas of prevention. Community pressure, family pressure. I've come across people who've been terrorists before who have been persuaded by their mother and influenced by their mother to change and turn. So do we not have enough integration in this country? I think they're going to have to really look at bigger picture prevention issues.
You say that the numbers are relatively small. Nonetheless, if you go back even just a fortnight to the Manchester atrocity, the perpetrator there had been drawn to the attention of his existence and the warnings by members of his family, I think, but also by members of his community. There were several warning bells rung, and yet he got through. Was that because people weren't paying enough attention, or because simply there were too many warnings of that kind reaching the security services?
I suspect the latter. I suspect too many warning kinds reaching them, and they are having to prioritise. And if there's not clear evidence that he's actually carrying out or got a bomb plan, and they'll do a little bit of investigation, and then they'll prioritise somewhere else. We do know they are stopping plots, and I do suspect that when we hear about these three, they'll have been on the radar somewhere. That is the form that we're seeing. That is the profile we're seeing of the current
terrorists. And if you are right in that, in surmising along those lines, won't that raise big questions for the intelligence authorities about why did they slip through? I mean, it can't just be down to, oh, there were too many of them to be tracking down.
Of course. And every single time we have something. Lee Rigby, the drummer who was killed over in Woolwich, the guy at Westminster Bridge, the guy up in Manchester, and I have no doubt these guys, they have been on the radar somewhere. And we need to be careful not to blame them. They're doing their best. 9 out of 10 plots are being stopped. But short of putting anybody that somebody reports under investigation, that's not going to happen. And in a democracy, if I say something about you and suddenly you're under surveillance, that's not how democracy works.
And that was Margaret Gilmore speaking to me yesterday afternoon. To come back to you, Laura Perrins, as well as being part of the Irish diaspora, I should have mentioned as well, you're co-editor of the Conservative Woman website. So you would be, I suppose, seen as somebody who might be a critical friend of or observer of what Theresa May is doing. Does Jeremy Corbyn have a point, as he said when he said last night, as he did, that a part of the difficult and embarrassing conversation that she referred to yesterday outside number 10 should be about relations with Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states that have funded and fueled extremist ideology?
Well, I think this is the issue about making arms sales to Saudi Arabia. I mean, it is a policy that perhaps could be looked at again, but the point is it's a policy, I believe, that every British Prime Minister has done for at least the last 10 years. I mean, true that the Saudis are funding in some ways perhaps extremism through certain mosques, but the big issue is what do you do when that extremism actually starts infiltrating the mosques? Are you willing to, as May says, have those embarrassing conversations and ask the tough questions? I mean, Corbyn and certainly the London Mayor said he can't even name the enemy, namely Islamic extremism. So that's the first thing you have to do before you want to examine and exactly what other issues or measures you can take when tackling terrorism. And I mean, the issue about terrorism is, just coming off that last report, it's true, you know, if you wanted to crunch the numbers statistically, it's very unlikely anything will happen to you. But the point about terror is that it's terrorising a vast majority through only some very small acts, because it's so random. Okay, yes. You're out having a drink and you get stabbed in the back of the neck. So you're walking around London, and I certainly am constantly scanning. I walk back from the pavements. I'd be very slow to bring the children into town now. You know, this is a real impact on people's everyday lives. And I think to say, you know, you're cautious or you're afraid doesn't make you a bad person. Whereas it seems certainly from some of the coverage, you know, you can't even admit to actually it is quite terrifying, you know, to be caught up in a terrorist campaign.
And I suppose, Lucy Thomas, there are echoes, and I think it was said overnight as well, of something the chilling IRA spokesperson said after the Brighton bomb in 1984, they only have to be lucky once. The authorities have to be lucky all the time.
Yes, and as your clip just before was saying, you know, nine out of 10 being caught is, you know, fantastic, but it only takes one of those 10 to be successful. And actually where we're speaking from now is just by Westminster Bridge, where that awful attack happened, and already we've seen much more heightened security. There are big bollards and so on. But I think to Laura's point, we have to be really careful that we don't allow it to affect our way of life, and that you don't find yourself changing what you're doing as a result of that.
I think it's
very difficult not for it to do so.
To come back to some of the other issues, we haven't mentioned the NHS so far in this conversation. I'm just wondering, Philip Blond, to what extent that is going to be a decisive factor in this election.
Well, I think, and I've long argued, that we're in the middle of a dramatic shift in the West, that the ideologies that have governed us for the last 40, 50 years are failing and have failed. And what we're seeing right across the West, from Trump to Brexit to how close the various insurgent parties have got in Europe, is people saying the standard economic mix of free sort of economic liberalism and social liberalism don't work, and don't work for us, and certainly don't work for the poor, and the evidence is out there that it doesn't, and increasingly it won't work for the middle class. And we're also just about to face something that's even more extreme than globalization, which is automation, which can take out jobs at an unprecedented scale.
Well, yeah, Ken Baker, the former Secretary of State for Industry, I think back in the year dot, has been very strong on this. I mean, literally millions and millions of jobs are being wiped out.
We will have self-driving vehicles. It will happen first in lorries. What will those people do? They won't retrain as human systems analysts. You know, what role will they do? So the point I want to say is that politics have changed. I no longer believe it's about left and right. And in all of the polling and advice I do, there's words that you might use, like cosmopolitan versus patriot, is how people have tried to do it in Europe. I don't like that. I like those who feel insecure versus those who feel secure, or those who have assets that they want to protect and those who don't. And that is the new politics. And the interesting thing about this election is the Labour manifesto has spoken with old ideas that I don't think will work, but at least has spoken to that constituency. And the Conservative manifesto, it's open pages were wonderful, but its policy offer fell way short of that. And so the NHS is part of that. The NHS is part of what are we going to do and how are we going to help people? Because the just about managing is no longer the bottom, you know, 10 or 20%. It's actually an awful lot of people.
Given to what Philip says, but the extraordinary thing is, you can talk about the new politics until the cows come home, but we're actually having a very old politics election. We have reverted to a two-party general election. The Liberal Democrats in the centre and UKIP off way off to the right have failed to take off in any measurable sense.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, is there...
And it's statism under Labour versus free markets under the Tories. It's a very old-fashioned election.
But might there be an opportunity at hand, okay, one that may not be deliverable for some years... after Thursday, the Labour Party may have an opportunity to have a new leader and to make a fresh start. I mean, we've often heard that before.
Well, I think the Labour Party will be in a much, much stronger position under a different leader, of course, but it's not just about changing the leader. The Labour Party has to discover what it's about. Now, if the Labour Party is going to do better than we thought at the beginning of the general election, which is possible, I don't think it's going to do spectacularly well, but I think it might do better. We're then faced with a situation where the Labour Party is too weak to succeed, too weak to win, but too strong to die. And that makes it very difficult for a new force, centre force, or even any kind of genuinely new politics, because I really don't think that Jeremy Corbyn represents a new politics, to break through. There's going to be a big debate about this after the election, but there's an awful lot of people, not just in the Labour Party, but very much in the Labour Party, looking at the figures, looking at how many people come back onto the Labour benches, and where you take centre-left politics from there.
I mean, the big The big question is really, where is the money going to come from? I mean, you have the NHS, which across left and right is still widely supported in Britain. I think there should be a royal commission because it's unsustainable in the long term. But the NHS, education and social care are the three huge social issues in the election. And I think they will be a big issue, perhaps more so than security and more than Brexit. I think we like those issues. But actually on the ground, social care, education, as I said, and the NHS will be the big players. And the real question is, where is the money going to come from to fund these?
Well, there's £350 million a week that's not going into the NHS. Is not the whole story from this time last year.
And the pressing thing is, you could bury that £250 million in the NHS tomorrow and they'll need the same amount again come Friday. So that we need a long-term plan. And as a free market here, I think generally you should be pushing the economy, a capitalist economy is where the wealth comes from. And a Corbyn election will be a Corbyn succession disaster for that. But that is the question. Where's the money coming from?
We're creating a world in which increasingly we've created, and I believe in free markets, but we no longer have free markets. We've got a market that are creating oligopolies and monopolies at a grand scale. And these great transnationals are capturing enormous percentage shares of the market who are not paying their taxes, are not hiring people, are having relatively low growth compared to the past. So what we have is a form of economic, particularly in the developed world, that is not working, and it's also not working for middle class people. Now I think Lance is right. We've returned to two-party politics, but we haven't returned to the old ideologies. Well, we have with Labour, but I think we're actually stumbling towards a new settlement. You see it with Macron, you see it with Trump, you see it with people trying to reform the ideology, successfully or unsuccessfully, but that's what's going on.
Lucy, you have the last word.
Well, I think, actually, going back to the point about where's the money going to come from, one of the sad things about this supposedly being a Brexit election, Theresa May wanted to have a mandate for whatever Brexit deal she wanted, and yet we haven't really had much of the detail. And to the £350 million a week for the NHS point, it's such a shame that all these untruths, frankly, that were spoken during the campaign, they haven't been scrutinised. There really hasn't been, the opposition haven't come to the wicket and made sure that the Brexit deal is scrutinised properly. So she will have a mandate for whatever kind of Brexit she wants.
You have, as I said, had the last word. Lucy Thomas, Head of Brexit Advice at Edelman Communications, my thanks to you. Thanks also to Laura Perrins, co-editor of the Conservative Woman website. Thanks too to Lance Price, former Director of Communications with the Labour Party, and to Philip Blond, former Special Advisor to David Cameron. We'll have the latest news on the police investigation and also what the Prime Minister Theresa May has been saying after this short break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.